Akatra Foundation presents the Akatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're here again to take some pretty complex source material, this time a really powerful work of literature, and pull out the most compelling insights for you.
Yeah, help you understand not just the story, but maybe the mechanics behind how it was created, too.
Exactly. And today we're opening up a real landmark, I think, of 21st century literature.
Mm-hmm. It's the graphic memoir Fun Home, a family tragicomic by Alison Bechtel.
Now, this book, it's really more than just an autobiography, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. It's like a forensic, intellectual breakdown of memory and family secrets.
Right. And the core drama, the engine driving it, is the daughter's, well, obsessive, almost cold case investigation into her father's secret life.
And his probable suicide, yeah. Plus, their incredibly complex, kind of tragic, inverted relationship when it comes to sexuality and art.
It's this act of, like, deep psychological excavation.
Totally. And what's so fascinating, I think, is how Bechtel doesn't just tell you the story. She puts this critical framework onto her own past.
How do you mean?
Well, she approaches her family history less like a daughter just remembering things and more like a detective.
Okay.
Yeah, constructing this really complex reality from all these fragments, diaries, letters, memories, even literary references.
Okay, let's unpack this. So our mission today is to really get into how Bechtel used literature and the unique structure of graphic art as tools.
Tools to decode what sounds like just devastating silence and trauma within her own family.
Yeah, and maybe by extension within that whole American closet culture of the late 20th century.
So to frame this, maybe we should start with Alison Bechtel herself, before Fun Home.
Good idea.
She wasn't unknown. She was already highly respected for her comic strip, Dykes to Watch Out For.
Right, which ran for years and really showed off her sharp, you know, politically savvy observational skills.
Exactly. Established her voice.
That strip definitely made her a major voice, yeah. But Fun Home, which came out in 2006, that just shifted her into a whole different league, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The literary stratosphere. It eventually led to a MacArthur Genius Fellowship.
And it proved, I think, that the comic medium wasn't just capable of handling sophisticated critique.
Right.
It was almost essential for it in this case.
It really was a genre breakthrough. It showed comics could manage intense intellectual rigor, blending autobiography, literary criticism, visual art, just seamlessly.
It's like this dense tapestry, right? Woven with family letters, diary entries, old photographs, and all these highbrow literary allusions threaded through.
Mm-hmm. And the setting itself, you can't separate it from the themes of performance and, well, death.
We're talking rural Beach Creek, Pennsylvania. And the family business was the Bechtel Funeral Home,
which the kids quickly, and maybe darkly ironically, nicknamed the Fun Home.
Wow. That name alone says so much.
It's heavy, right? They live directly above the embalming room.
Serious.
Yeah. So it was an environment that was both, you know, macabre, but also highly performative. Life and death, beauty and decay, all just right there side by side.
Kind of unnerving. Sets the stage for emotional dysfunction, maybe.
You could say that, yeah.
So the central enigma, the kind of gravitational center of this whole memoir, is Bruce Bechtel, the father. Hmm. His life seems just full of contradictions.
Definitely. By day, he wore two hats, professionally speaking.
Right. He was a third generation funeral director.
And also a high school English teacher.
But the identity that really consumed him, the one that comes through so strongly in the book, was this aesthetic tyrant. Is that too strong?
No, I think that fits. By night, he obsessively poured all his energy into restoring their decaying Victorian mansion.
A museum quality perfection, it sounds like.
Exactly. He demanded aesthetic brilliance in the decor, in the house, but emotionally.
He remained distant, remote.
Very. Yeah. And prone to these unpredictable, sometimes violent rages.
And this obsession with appearance, with the surface, it seems like it extended to how they even communicated or didn't communicate.
Well, yeah. Bruce introduced Alison to great books, Proust, Wilde, Fitzgerald.
Which seems positive, but you're saying literature became her main way of understanding the family's unspoken stuff.
Pretty much. Instead of actual conversation, it was all mediated through these literary parallels she started to see.
While Bruce is demanding artistic perfection in the house, what about Helen Bechtel, the mother?
Helen. She's the brilliant, withdrawn counterpoint, a former actress and teacher herself.
Right.
The sources, Alison's account, show her retreating, kind of enduring her husband's moods in these endless projects by escaping into her own world.
Literature for her, too.
Yeah, specifically Henry James and classical music, just creating her own separate space.
And Allison mentions this constant kind of silent war over identity between her and her father.
Mm-hmm. Allison preferred, you know, butch mannerisms wearing trousers.
And her father.
He subtly but constantly tried to impose traditional femininity on her through clothes, mannerisms.
Maybe projecting his own stuff,
yeah,
his own desires or fears.
It seems likely in retrospect. This creates this decades-long tension, right, between outward performance and inner truth.
Which just builds and builds, I guess, until Allison finds her escape hatch.
Exactly. That moment arrives when she leaves for Oberlin College.
Which becomes this profound act of liberation for her.
Totally. She discovers feminism, finds an intellectual community, and crucially, at 19, she figures out her own sexuality.
And she comes out as a lesbian in a letter she sends home, a really heartfelt one, apparently.
Yeah. And she approached it with almost academic rigor, interestingly, researching her identity before she wrote that letter.
But the response she got, it wasn't what you might expect, like anger or rejection.
Not at all. It was a revelation that just completely shattered her perception of reality.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. This is the pivot, right?
Absolutely. Her mother calls her, not to talk about Allison's coming out, but to drop this bombshell.
Which was?
That Bruce, her father, had been leading a secret life for years.
Oh, wow.
Having numerous clandestine affairs with men, including some of his former high school students, a secret Helen had kept for a long, long time.
That must have just reframed everything. Instant.
Everything. All those childhood moments. Mm. The rages, the emotional distance, the obsessive focus on the house.
Suddenly they all seemed explained, maybe, as the burden of this highly repressed, closeted man.
Right. And the profound, really tragic insight Bechtel draws from this is the inverted parallel.
Explain that.
Allison's journey out of the closet, this act of finding freedom.
Ran parallel, but inverted, to her father's entrapment within his own closet.
Exactly. Painfully parallel. They were, in a way, these tragic mirror images, bound by a secret they both eventually embodied, just in totally opposite ways.
That's a powerful connection she makes.
It is undeniably powerful, Allison's truth versus Bruce's artifice.
Boy.
Does focusing so much on the mirror image maybe risk simplifying things a bit?
How's
well, the unique generational tragedy of the father's repression. I mean, we have to remember how much harder it was for him in his time and place.
That's a really crucial point, yeah. It acknowledges the historical context, the burden he carried. But I think the power of the book for Allison lies in how she uses that recognition.
To move from seeing him just as a child sees a parent.
Exactly. To transition from seeing him as just a tyrant to understanding he was also a flawed, suffering human being.
And this dawning understanding, this potential for connection, it's just cut short, isn't it?
Tragically short. Just 4 months after that revelation from her mother, Bruce Bechtel, only 44 years old, is killed.
Hit by a Sunbeam bread truck.
Officially ruled an accident. But for Allison and her family, there's this lingering, unshakable suspicion it was suicide.
Right. And that ultimate ambiguity, accident or intentional act, becomes the central, driving, unresolved question.
The question that basically forces her hand as an artist, right? She has to investigate.
Mm-hmm. So how do you even begin to approach a lifetime of secrets that ends in such an ambiguous, violent way?
Bechtel's answer wasn't just memory. It was, like you said before, this rigorous, almost forensic construction. She needed a whole new method.
Precisely.
Hmm.
Her core intellectual approach seems to be that truth isn't some static fact just waiting out there to be found.
Okay.
It's a reality that you have to actively construct through investigation, interpretation, and crucially for her, through art. She becomes, as she puts it, a skeptical archivist of her own life.
But why comics specifically? What does the visual medium let her do that just writing prose wouldn't?
This is where the technical genius of the book really shines, I think. Comics allow for visual triangulation.
Triangulation.
Yeah, she doesn't just write about memory. She layers it visually. So a caption might state a fact, like I said, the coming out letter.
Okay.
But the panel drawn beneath it might show a conflicting image. Maybe her father looking distracted, drawing attention away, undermining the text. The visual structure holds opposing ideas in tension simultaneously.
Yeah. Got it. So the panels themselves are like evidence boxes. You've got the adult narrator's voice, maybe bits of handwritten letters or diaries shown, and then these drawings of childhood memories.
All layered together. It forces you, the reader, to connect the dots, to try and impose some order on the chaos, just like she's doing.
It sounds like highly controlled chaos, though.
Oh, it is. She uses the myth of Daedalus and Icarus as a framework to structure it all.
How does that work?
Bruce is Daedalus, the master craftsman trapped in the labyrinth. He built the house, the funeral home, his own secrets.
And Allison is Icarus?
She sees herself as Icarus, yeah.
Uh-oh.
The child whose flight towards freedom, her coming out, her escape might have inadvertently caused the father's final fall. It's a heavy metaphor.
She really captures the essence of her father's whole performance, his artifice, in that quote.
Hang on.
He was an alchemist of sorts.
Turning the dross of his life into a metallic, impenetrable polish.
Yeah, that's powerful.
It shows the house wasn't just a hobby or decoration. It was the metaphor for his soul, right? Meticulously built to hide the mess underneath. That meticulous, almost desperate need for control. It makes that brief, final moment of potential connection so incredibly poignant.
You mean the final car ride?
Exactly. One of their last drives together. She tries to give him a book about lesbian feminist stories.
Awkward.
Totally awkward. And he, in turn, points out some local guy rumored to be gay. It's painful, but for just a second.
The wall comes down and at least becomes transparent.
Yeah. The wall of silence between them just flickers.
Mm.
Becomes transparent right before he dies.
And maybe that single moment of recognition, however brief, however unspoken, maybe that justified all the years of intellectual and artistic work it took to write Fun Home.
You could see it that way. And the result of that labor, its professional legacy, well, it profoundly cemented the graphic memoir as a serious literary form.
Definitely celebrated for its dense intertextuality, its nonlinear structure.
Which perfectly mirrors how memory and trauma actually work, doesn't it? It's not linear.
Not at all. And its cultural footprint is huge, too. A cornerstone of modern queer literature.
And then, of course, the Tony Award-winning Broadway musical adaptation.
Which brought the story to a whole new audience. And it also kind of retroactively grew global attention back to her earlier work.
Right. Cementing the Bechdel test, which actually originated in Dykes to watch out for as this global shorthand for, you know, basic gender representation in movies and media.
So if the core task of this book, this whole project, was turning family tragedy and a failure of connection into something lasting, something meaningful, what are we left with? What did this rigorous work teach us?
Well, the book introduces this idea of autography writing your own life, but by analyzing the texts, the secrets, the silences of those who shaped you.
And from that process, maybe there are three big lessons we can take away.
I think so. First, there's the emotional insight.
Okay.
It just demonstrates the devastating, maybe multi-generational loneliness that comes from keeping secrets. The destructive power of family silence.
You really feel that way. Okay, second.
The intellectual insight, which is that art isn't just, you know, a nice extra or a luxury. It can be an essential, rigorous tool for processing trauma, for imposing intellectual order on chaos, for finding meaning where maybe logic or pure memory just fail you.
Art as a way of knowing, almost.
Exactly. And finally, the universal insight.
Which is?
This book is really about the difficult but necessary and probably lifelong work of moving beyond how you saw your parents as a child.
Seeing them as complex, flawed human beings instead.
Yes. And realizing that empathy, real empathy, it starts with that intellectual wrestling match required to understand their complexity, their hidden lives.
So Allison Bechdel really did transform a family tragedy into this profound, lasting work of art through just sheer intellectual and artistic rigor.
Mm-hmm. The source material really suggests the book is about entering those sealed rooms, you know, the locked rooms of our own family history.
Fun Home definitely demonstrates that the process of understanding your parents is tied up with the lifelong work of defining yourself. But it leaves us with a final, maybe provocative question for you, the listener.
Which is, if you could somehow access the complete, unedited, unredacted truth about your own family's silent history, all those unspoken scripts.
Are you truly ready to read it? Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.